I'm Stephen John Drew from the official GunnaGeek.com show, a weekly geek news podcast that is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper. We call it the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other reporters for this special episode number 227 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Oh, we need to come up with another name immediately.
What, NGA doesn't do it for you?
No, not digging it.
All right. And Michelle.
Who'd have known that wearing a hood and carrying a bow and arrow runs in a gene pool?
That'd be interesting. I want to see the Green Arrow gene in the DNA sequence. Michelle, can you find that for me?
Sure, I'll get right on that on my handy little DNA thing right here on my desk.
Well, I would assume you would have one because you talk to Felicity all the time.
Oh, constantly. We're besties.
And you get all those special interviews, too.
Right. You know, she sends me wine and all that type of stuff. Yeah, complete besties.
And that is why you're the award-winning reporter, Michelle.
Exactly.
This podcast is recorded on Friday, February 8th, 2019, live on www.geeks.live.
That's right, and this evening we'll be discussing as Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could, and let's face it, probably will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and the rest of the DC Universe.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Michelle, this is indeed a very special episode of the Starling Tribune, and we have a very special episode of Arrow to cover, so why don't you go ahead and break it down for us?
Sure thing. This episode is called Emerald Archer. It's Season 7, Episode 12, but in the overall Arrow thing, it's actually episode 150, so it is a milestone. It aired Monday, February 4th, 2019. It was directed by Glenn Winter. Credits include 8 episodes of Arrow, 10 Supergirl, 5 Flash, 2 Legends, and 12 episodes of Smallville. Written by Mark Guggenheim, used to be the showrunner.
I know that guy.
Yeah, we know that guy. Also has written 17 episodes of Arrow, 2 Supergirl, and 14 Legends, and frequent Arrow writer Emilio Ortega Aldrich.
So talking about Mark Guggenheim, I was rewatching the first two episodes of the crossover this year, Elseworlds, and I spotted and I think we talked about it before, but I spotted the Easter egg of M. Guggenheim in Arkham. His name was on one of the Arkham cells there. So we're going to talk again about Elseworlds because I want to revisit it, not this episode, but in the future. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, getting back to this week. So on Monday, the 4th of February, 2019, Arrow aired this episode, Emerald Archer, which is the 12th episode of the 7th season, to a live rating of 1.07. It should have been 10 times that much. There was no Supergirl episode on Sunday because, you know, the big game, that football big game that occurred there. And then following Arrow on Monday, the 4th of February, Black Lightning aired the 12th episode of the 2nd season titled The Book of Secrets, Chapter 2, Just and Unjust, to a live rating of 0.95. And on Tuesday, The Flash aired the 13th episode of the 5th season, Goldfaced, to a live rating of 1.89. And I'm thinking both Flash and Arrow were a little bit low from what they should have been this week. I'm really interested to see the live plus 7-day ratings when we can pull them. Michelle, what do you think?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of people watch these shows on the app and on DVR because there's a lot of live stuff, whether it's a sports game or like America's Got Talent, champion things, or things like The Voice or The Bachelor. Those type of shows people talk about like the next day because they're live and they're immediate. I think that draws some of the live people away from our shows. I think that's why we get at least a million bump when it comes to the Live Plus 7.
I think that's fair. I'm part of the problem. I fully admit the only thing I watch live on TV anymore is two things. It's sports and it's the news when I want to watch the news. And I guess, okay, three, Jeopardy, because I watch Jeopardy when I eat dinner sometimes. So three things.
Interesting to talk about that, and I want to explore it just a little bit further. So do you guys think that the definition of a hit show now is not necessarily the ratings, but if you have to watch it the day it comes out because you have to talk about it the next day? What do you think, Michelle?
I think it's more than that. There are shows that need that instant response because of their live things, like The Masked Singer, for example. People really want to watch that live because otherwise on the internet it gets spoiled really easy and that show has taken off and stuff. But there are other shows, like I'm a big fan of The 100, which also is on the CW. It has a huge like social media presence, a big Tumblr presence, and that has helped it. We've seen it with The Expanse. The social media and everything has helped save that. I think it's a combination of live numbers, again, that Live Plus 7, and also social media presence. Are people talking about it? Are they rewatching it?
Yeah, talking about rewatching, I've rewatched this episode three times. Michelle, how many times did you rewatch it?
I've watched it twice.
Okay. And then Chris, how many times did you rewatch it?
Only once, but I was limited because of some work circumstances and other things. So I got it. I was supposed to watch it yesterday, watched it today.
Do you plan to watch it again?
I will probably watch it again, yes.
Okay. So, in fairness, do you have anything to respond to Michelle about her talk about the social media presence and the Live Plus 7 day?
I mean, social media comes into play on a lot of these things because they hire these dang ad firms and stuff now to watch what's the social media presence on this show. And while it's not equivalent to ratings, it's equivalent to buzz. So, I think they like to see the live buzz and people talking about it. And then the nice thing is when you've got it airing on the East Coast, it's airing 3 hours later on the West Coast. So you get probably a solid 5 to 6 hours of people just talking about something on a live day.
So that's important. And the reason why I wanted to discuss it here in the 150th episode is this show has been going on for 6.5 years. And in the 6.5 years that the show has been on, that has changed. At the beginning when the show came out, the definition of success was like 5 to 12 million in viewership a night. And now we're down to, okay, if your Live Plus 7 day rating is 4, and then, or 2 to 4, and then if you get a good presence after the fact, like you were talking about, good social media following, so that people will binge it on Netflix when it comes out later, or whatever platform that it's placed on the whole season when it's done, that is the definition of success. So, a lot more to all of that, which you can probably hear a lot more on another podcast on the network called On the Bubble with Joshua Liston. But we're going to limit our remarks here to Arrow. And talking about Arrow, again, we're talking about the 150th episode. Oh my gosh, guys, I had no idea walking into it what the opening was going to be like, and it just drew me right in. I was like, first I was asking, am I watching the right thing? And then second, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I'm so glad they did it. So Michelle, on that theme there, what is the overall theme for the episode in relation to the title?
Well, the title is the documentary, Emerald, of course, Green Archer for Arrow. And the Green Arrow has been called the Emerald Archer in the comics and such. So it's a really good title for a documentary about the Green Arrow and the other vigilantes from Star City to Central City to Gotham. We got another Gotham mention. I've been keeping my ears, you know, open to all the Gotham mentions now.
Not only was there a Gotham mention, but there was a Wayne Enterprises mention.
Wayne Tech mention, I believe it was.
Yeah. The exosuit is Wayne Tech. So we're getting a lot of that now, which is cool. I like it.
Well, I think it might be twofold there because we've got Batwoman coming, potentially, assuming they pick up the pilot. And then Gotham, the TV show on Fox, is kind of wrapping. So you can start mentioning some of those things and not worry about brand confusion.
That is very true. And as SP said, it started off with the WB logo, like it was an actual documentary starting. And I teared up a little bit with the documentary starting with an interview with Quentin. Was I the only one?
I enjoyed it.
Not at all. That was amazing to see Quentin back. Now, I had to ask myself, is this really, did they shoot this like way back then and they just didn't show it on screen, or did they get him to come back in and film everything? I think this is all new footage for this episode, but I'm not 100% sure. Chris, what do you think?
I think it's new footage because you can easily just have some, he's working another show, so I'm sure that there is a relationship of some kind there between the crews on those shows, and it could be a pay someone some wages to film a 30-second scene for Arrow. I'm sure there was some kind of legitimate agreement worked out to do that and to bring in all these other actors we hadn't seen in a while so that they didn't have to come to Vancouver.
I know we got Willa Holland for Thea for 30 seconds. We had Sarah, of course. Sin, who we haven't seen in a few seasons. And we found out that Ragman is still alive and still out there.
Still alive at the beginning of the episode. We're unclear about his whereabouts at the end of the episode.
That's true.
Well, he doesn't kill them. He just takes trophies is what we found out about this guy, though. The vigilante hunter. Wasn't that line thrown around?
Aren't their throats slit?
Perhaps I'm misremembering then.
Well, no, you're right, because so... Oh, that's right. Okay, so the woman says that she's been collecting interviews over time. So the interview, you're right. The interview with Ragman probably happened before, because they mentioned that they found Ragman's mask and Huntress, and they haven't been able to get in touch with them at all. So that means the Huntress is out. Because if they couldn't get in touch with her, that means she's out of prison, because she's in prison. So maybe now she's not in prison anymore.
She could have served her time or gotten early release. Remember, she did work with the Argus, was it, at the time? Or was it Star City Police? I can't remember which. But she worked with law enforcement that one time, and she was allowed to because she was on good behavior. So I could see her getting either an early release or actually finished her sentence, because this has been years now.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we had the worst interview of all, and that's, of course, with Barry.
Did I screw that up?
I don't mean damaged like bad, but...
That was funny, yeah. Oh, no, I didn't know he was the Green... My gosh, you think you know a guy. It's like worst ever. So I got a question. Was he being filmed in Central City, or do you think he was being filmed on one of his trips back and forth because of his CSI job with Star City?
I thought it was in his apartment, it looked like.
Okay.
In Central City. So, I mean, they made a point of name dropping or referencing vigilantes from Star City to Central City to Gotham and things like that. So it would stand to reason that as part of this, they might try and talk to people in these other cities where there are vigilantes and things like that. I don't know.
I'm going to give a small spoiler here, and it's not really affecting anything, at least not that I know of. But the reason why it's further confusion if it is in his apartment is the fact that I'm not sure if they're in the apartment anymore.
Yes, they are.
Okay, so it's just the office? Okay, got it.
Yeah, Barry and Iris still have that apartment.
Okay, fair enough.
And what I was surprised with, I really thought that this was going to be, I don't know, like a clip show. I mean, I know there were writers. I know Mark Guggenheim was writing it and they had Emilio involved. I was very surprised and very thrilled that we had actual plot and character development and movement forward. What about you, Chris?
I'm pleasantly surprised, because the way they describe things with it all being focused on the documentary, I didn't expect much besides like kind of the one plot, one-off freak of the week kind of thing that ties into like clips from the past and things like that. But no, they certainly advanced what's going on in kind of in a big way with the reassembling of Team Arrow.
Or at least most of it. Yeah. I was actually pleasantly surprised, by the way, that Paul Blackthorne had more screen time than Kirk Escovedo in this episode. Not that I dislike either actor. I like them both very much, but it was just fitting for the 150th that the big villain got less screen time than some past actors.
It seemed kind of forced to have Diaz in there. I mean, I think they're just trying to find ways to get Kirk Acevedo screen time right now, because That was the only villain you had that was really interviewed or anything in this documentary, or at least what we saw of the documentary. I would argue we probably didn't see the entire contents of the Emerald Archer documentary.
Right. But to Michelle's point, yeah. Heck, I really like this episode and the plot movement forward for all of the main characters. You had Oliver coming back to Diggle and them acknowledging the fact that they really haven't had a chance to work with each other. Diggle did try to tell Oliver what was up. I think he could have tried a little harder. I think they could have taken 30 seconds, a minute, whatever, to quickly go through it. But on the other hand, Emiko was in danger. So I don't blame them for not going further into detail once Curtis came up to them. We could go down the list of characters and every single one of them, including the mayor, who I think is a secondary character really this year, really moved forward. Laurel Lance moved forward. Renee moved forward. He had everybody that's a main character. Now, you did not have some of the flash forward characters, like Roy Harper wasn't there, but he's not in Star City right now, so I can get that. But it was nice seeing Willa Holland around too. Now, she's in her own series too right now, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't think so.
Okay, so she was just a free agent coming back on set.
I mean, I can check the Google machine.
No, I'm just looking right now. She's in, she did some voiceover work for Kingdom Hearts 3, which is a video game, but that's it.
They did touch on Roy when he tried to take the fall for Oliver.
Oh, yes.
And there was that interview and they were like, why would you do it? It's like, because the city needs and the hero and such.
I stand corrected. And I think that was all new footage too.
Yeah, quite. It should be.
We did have a bad guy this time, as we talked about, the vigilante hunter, who we found out likes vigilantes and such, but okay, had the really cool like wing tech gear and such. I'm sorry, I have to get this thought out of the way. The camera crew was like following them, like when they were the cops and trying to... Did any of you have the bad boys, you know, what you going to do, running through...
No, but I can totally see it now. And when I go back and watch this again, that's all that's going to be playing through my head now.
I know. Oh, gosh, I didn't either, but totally. Oh, that's a perfect characterization of it. Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Well, the thing here is that both Stephen Amell and SCPD are fully trying to get the public on board. So they're given open access to this camera crew, right? And as we know, camera crews can be extensively intrusive, especially when they're given full access, and they do their best to have full access. It's kind of funny though, whenever everybody says, okay, you can't see this for whatever reason, it's usually for their safety, although not all the time, but it's usually for their safety. And the one time that she stands up and she goes, no, you said we're going to give us full access and we signed up for this. We know what's going on. And then they get, you know, explosions going on around them and then they run out the... Well, one camera guy stayed, actually, but the other two left the building. So I have to hand it to that one camera guy. That was an amazing shot. The fight in the office building at 101 Federal, Adam Hunt's building, when they're up in whatever floor that they're on running around. Obviously, it was not Stephen Amell. At least it didn't look like Stephen Amell because it was, you know, the lighting was all blacked out and everything. But that was just amazing. And as he's running through that open space, which I can only think was a cube farm when the building was actually up, he was shooting arrows. Of course, they're CGI arrows. I could understand that. But he was shooting an arrow. Did you guys see it when he was leaping on his side at the end? Oh, that was amazing.
That was a cool scene.
And I loved how they brought Hunt back. Season one callback. That was a great like Easter egg for those of us who've been watching since season one and such.
Adam Hunt's been in, his name has been in and out of the entire series. I won't say it's been once a year, but he has, it wasn't just season one. His name or him have been in several different seasons. So that is actually a heck of a callback for Beth Schwartz to make. When you're making the show now in its seventh year, and I believe Beth Schwartz was involved from season one, if not season one, season two. She's grown up as a TV producer within the show. We've talked about it before. She's remembering all this stuff and able to bring it all together. And that's what's making this season special. Not only do you have the DC legend behind Green Arrow, Batman, you know, the DC stuff, but you also have the legend of the show now over the last six seasons, and it's great. I mean, Sin, bringing Sin back, I did not see that. That was a nice touch.
I didn't see it at all, and it was, like you said, it was nice. It was a good callback, and you go, oh yeah, we haven't seen her in ages.
And then we had that big fight at the end at the town hall where we finally get our Team Arrow back.
It was kind of nice to see.
Chris, what did you think of the fight?
I thought it was enjoyable. I liked how that Dinah kind of had to have that moment. Well, guess I better reveal who I am so that I can save the mayor and myself. And I think that the actor playing the mayor played it off very nice. The look she kind of gives Dinah. And Dinah's like, what can you do? It was a lot of fun to have everyone back together, to see the T-spheres out there again, get the tear sphere noise. I'd forgotten how unique that was on camera or on my speakers, but seeing it on camera also. You don't realize how much you miss something until you see it again.
The mayor, by the way, is played by Laura, spelled L-A-A-R-A, Sadiq. And, of course, the character's name is Mayor Emily Pollard. And she is doing an amazing job because you think she's just this cold-hearted mayor, right? And she even mentions that. You think you're going to melt my cold heart. And, no, not really, but I see the benefit of having them around. Now, I think there's a little bit of, I'm going to let you hang yourselves here because I'm going to bring you in. If you don't produce results, I'm going to. But at this point, it would be difficult for her to do anything else. Okay, let's get back to the fight. The fight reminded me a little bit of the multi-tiered, multi-leveled fight that they had way back in with the League of Assassins, right, in season two. And if you remember from the beginning of the documentary, there were scenes from that were shown in the documentary. That was, well done, Beth Schwartz, bringing that in. Again, this episode, well done. Beth Schwartz doing a good job, and they're bringing all the great callbacks in. If this show makes it another couple of years, and we already know we got a season 8, we talked about that last week, but if they make it another year, we're knocking on 200 episodes, and I'm wondering what they're planning for that. Because, you know, they said after we did the 100, we thought of some ideas for 150. You know, they got to be thinking about 200 now.
Yeah, and you were right, SP, this week, it's a great nostalgia play. They didn't overdo it with the nostalgia. It's almost the perfect amount to have you go, oh, I remember that. I remember that. That was so cool. I want to go back and look at that again and have moments like that.
I want to talk about a few of the characters. We get William back. And I think we're seeing some of the seeds of his anger that we see in the flash forward. Now, SP, you are the one with offspring. I think William's anger is justified.
Okay, there's a little justification of the anger, yes. I think they could have done a better job of communicating back and forth with him. And as we know, he was texting with Zoe because of an encrypted, secure text back and forth. So there's no reason why Oliver and Felicity couldn't have been using that same sort of communication method back and forth. Look, I've got kids away at school. I make sure I communicate with them every so often. I mean, there's a fine line. When a kid goes away to college, and I realize William's not in college, but when a kid goes away to college, there's a fine line between hovering parent and friend and concerned parent. You know, there's a fine line across the board there, and you don't want to be that hovering parent. You really don't, unless your kid really wants it, which is like one in a million. But most kids, you want to let them try to go out on their own. In this case, though, it seems, I mean, he's had his mom die on him, on Leon Yu. I think he needs a little bit more family, and I think he would have understood if they would have communicated with him how bad the situation really was. And in true Green Arrow fashion, Stephen Amell, even though he's as Oliver Queen, even though he's doing a better job of opening up about things, I think he could have done a better job of parenting right there. And I think Felicity could as well. Now, remember, Felicity is the stepmom right now and not William's mom, but she is the only mom that William has. So, yeah, I think both of them could have done a better job back and forth. So, yes, he's justified a little bit, but on the other hand, there's some other things going on which have not been fully explained with William.
I kind of get where he's coming from. You send me off after we've been in hiding for a while. There's an attack. You send me off with not much of a goodbye. My father comes out of prison, and you don't let me come back and see my father who's out of prison. I get his frustration. I get where he'd be coming from. Be like, I thought we were family. You've sent me away. Yes, it's for my safety, but this is the same kind of thing that you got mad at Oliver for doing all these times.
So, Michelle, from your question, I'm thinking you're of the same ilk, or you're thinking he is really justified.
I do believe he is justified. I mean, his dad came home and they didn't even, I guess they didn't even FaceTime with him or something. And he was the only kid there during Christmas break. That's tough. But we also see his budding friendship with Zoe. And I loved Renee's, to me, that was like the ultimate dad thing he's done so far, where he's looked at William and Zoe and had that immediate thought of, are they just friends? I don't know. But I'm going to mention that I'm cleaning my gun in the other room just so William can pick up on that.
Yeah, I've done that. I've literally done that before. I'll just be in the kitchen here cleaning my guns, plural. Mm-hmm. Guns, plural. Yeah. Yeah, but Renee, he does a good job at that. But I found it hilarious that he said, if you mention this to Aunt Dinah, I'll take that pizza away from you. Yeah, right. He's not going to take the pizza. I know his limits, and he's a big pushover. He's not going to take the pizza away from Zoe.
Well, I don't think he was being serious. I mean, it felt lighthearted to me.
I think he was trying to.
But that's also some of the seeds of the flash forward, because Zoe is like, you know, my dad and Aunt Dinah are arguing all the time, and I don't want that to happen to us. And they do a pinky swear. And as we all know, pinky swears are solid.
There's no higher form of swear.
When you're 14, I mean, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess there's, what is it? The spit oath between dudes, I guess. But I don't think Zoe's up for that.
Now, it seems as though Renee and Emiko is definitely forming their own little side Team Arrow thing. I don't want them to be an item. Because didn't he flirt with Thea?
He did, but that was pretty blatant flirting. I wasn't getting a huge flirt vibe here.
No, I saw the possibility more from her than from him. He's more, we have a job to do, let's do it. And he's looking at her, and it's not a romantic look. It's not a lustful look. It's a, we have a job to do look when they're in her lair after she gets out of the hospital. And we'll see how that progresses. But I have a question for you guys. Now, the mayor said, we're going to go ahead and give them all badges. Does that apply to Emiko?
See, that's what I was trying to figure out as well. And the implication I got with they all get badges was everyone that participated in that fight at the end, which Emiko did not. My thought is we probably have the new Green Arrow still be on the outs and still be a vigilante, and then it puts Oliver in the difficult situation, and now Diggle, I guess. Well, actually, almost everyone now, of knowing this is Oliver Queen's half-sister, how do we handle this?
I like that Oliver told Dinah about Emiko. I mean, I knew he was going to tell Diggle, but the fact that he also told Dinah, I think is a good step forward.
I like that Dinah was understanding of it. Be like, yeah, I could see how you need to get your head on straight for that. Where when he told Diggle at first, Diggle was kind of at first like, you kept something else from me? And maybe that's what actually helped him figure out the better way to tell it to Dinah, though, too, was to be like, I needed time to put my head on straight so they don't leap to the automatic conclusion. It's, yet again, Oliver Queen hiding the truth from everyone.
So they're not Team Arrow anymore. He can't exactly call a team meeting and go down to the bunker and say, guys, I have something to tell you. And he's done that before, so he can't exactly do that. He's got to go to everybody individually, and that puts a damper on being able to tell everybody, right? So, it's just a time delay. And honestly, he's getting it out as soon as he really can, given the constraints of everything. I'm on Oliver's side here. Yeah, could he have done it maybe a little faster? Yeah, but at the same time, he did need time to deal with it personally, but also they needed to ascertain that she wasn't like a new Talia or Nyssa and trying to kill everybody.
I think everyone was in the same place when it was all said and done. Once they'd found out from Oliver, it was that, okay, yeah, I get what's happening here. Diggle jumped to a conclusion at first, but then it was kind of a reset when he realized, okay, this has got to be a difficult situation for Oliver, and it's not the same as past situations we've had. So I think it was an interesting way to have a more mature revelation on this show between the characters.
Chris, that conversation made me miss the Diggle-Oliver bromance so much.
If it looks like what I think it looks like, we're getting it back. Because if the team is put back together and they're working for the police because they're all deputized, one would assume they're going to be seeing each other every day and that chance is there to come back. The real question is, what does that mean for Diggle's work at Argus with Lila? Is that just a part-time gig now, or is he splitting time between the SCPD, TDY'd SCPD? I don't know.
That is an interesting point. I'm going to take it a step further. Is Curtis and Diggle going out as quote-unquote vigilantes actual violations of the anti-vigilante law, or are they just acting like Argus employees with the permission to operate within Star City?
Yeah, I was wondering why Diggle didn't pull the Argus card. I mean, I guess maybe he didn't want to do that because of Renee, because Renee wouldn't have been in that. He would have been able to protect himself and Curtis. This has been an interesting episode for Renee, because he, at the beginning, he's like, oh, look, Oliver's got that shiny badge. And, oh, you didn't have any other badges for the rest of us? Sort of a dig.
He did dig it. And then Dinah fought back a little bit. And she said, look, Oliver's trying to keep the one he has, or the mayor's trying to take the one Oliver has. So I can't give out any more right now. In the end, they did the right thing. Because if they didn't do anything, so the mayor was pressing, even though she was warned not to have the, whatever you want to call it, debate, press conference, whatever it was, town hall, I guess. They, even though she knew that it was threatened, she was having this meeting anyway. So the only way that they could defend was actually bring out vigilantes or maybe Argus or whatever. So I could see how vigilantes saving the day here actually worked to everybody's favor. Because if it came out that the mayor had this meeting in the face of the threat, which actually happened, that would look really bad on her. So they did have something over her.
And the mayor allowing Dinah to basically say, you get a badge, you get a badge, you get a badge, seems to lead to the problems that we see in the flash forward. And I live tweet this, and I was reading the feed, and someone on Twitter actually predicted this, and I couldn't find out who it was. And so I'm sorry, this was not my thing, but somebody on Twitter was like, this is going to end in the future with someone watching this. And lo and behold, that's how it ends. And we find out that this documentary was actually supposed to be shelved. Black Star is watching a bootleg stolen copy of it. And then we get somebody entering. That person is Connor. Do not know if it's necessarily JJ or not, or somebody else. And Connor calls Black Star Mia, which that has comic book connections, but don't know if they're going to go anywhere with that or not. But they end up finding the bunker. In the documentary, Oliver says that we're going to rebuild it and it's going to be better. We're going to be better. But when we find the bunker, it's still a wreck. What did you think of that revelation, SP?
I'm almost disappointed. I really had to deal with that for a while. And I put some spoiler tag stuff in our Discord server channel about this, which you can find at gunnageek.com/discord. It's the Starling Tribune channel in that Discord. And we've been using the spoiler tag to talk about the episode before we talk about it here on the podcast, at least. And my issue with that is I'm having a problem because the team ultimately fails and there's no way around it. And the bunker being destroyed in the future, actually Star City being destroyed in the future, it's all pointing to the same thing, where these characters that we've known to come and love, they're failing. And as far as we know, Felicity and Oliver are dead. Now, I do have thoughts on that. We've explored those on the podcast in the past, where I actually think we're being misdirected a little bit there. But in any event, right now, that's where we're at. So I'm hoping that they are misdirecting us a little bit, and that the team, ultimately, it's going to take them so long to come to the victory in the future, but they eventually get to the victory in the future. And so that's my small hope there. But seeing the bunker in the future, after they said they're going to rebuild it, and they obviously did because the destruction was different in both shots, it was almost disheartening. Like, why am I watching the show if they're not going to be able to do anything? So that's my initial thought of it. But my other thought is, I have faith in Beth Schwartz, and I think she's leading us into a good place eventually. And I'm just going to go with her, at least for now, because she has not proven me wrong yet. This could be a huge reveal at the end of the season or next season, because we know we have a season 8. So that's my thoughts.
So it's interesting because they've kind of put themselves in a difficult position. Like you talked about, it's kind of disheartening if the stuff we're seeing in the present with all the people we like means that they lose in the future because everything's wrong. But if they also find a way to change things in the current day that would change the future, then it basically rewrites all these flash forwards we've been having, and we've wasted our time all year on them. So it's interesting. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but like you said, at this point, I'm kind of like, I'll trust them to see what comes out of this. I'm curious to see how they get themselves out of this conundrum.
My other thought in this whole thing is, if they do a, how far in the future is it? Were we talking 20-year jump? If they do a 20-year jump, they are no longer in line with the other CW shows, Supergirl and The Flash. So I find it difficult to believe that that is where they're leading us, away from the rest of the shows. But we already have Black Lightning that's not really part of the universe, and Supergirl is on a different Earth. So, you know, maybe this all can work. We do have the Legends of Tomorrow. They do time travel, so maybe they can go back and forth and bring the team back and forth as needed. I don't know.
I don't think this is going to end with them being out of sync with the timeline of the rest of the core shows. I don't think that's going to be, at least not until after the crossover for sure, because they've got to be able to cross over with less complexities. Could you imagine how difficult that would be if they had to do like a flashback episode in Arrow next year just to do the tie-in?
Yeah, but doable. I mean, we've had good flashback episodes in the past before. I don't know. The floor is so wide open now, whereas we were in a box for seasons 3, 4, 5, and 6, and now we're totally open. I guess, again, credit to Beth Schwartz and the team that she's put together, because they have us guessing this much again, and it's fun watching the show when you don't know what's going to happen.
That is true. Chris, anything about the episode you still want to talk about?
I think we touched on just about everything. I'll just reiterate, I've really enjoyed the fact that New Team Arrow is back together, and I don't think I've touched on it this season. I like the fact that Renee is back to his old school costume.
That is true, SP.
There's really so much. I mean, I wish I would have taken notes when I was watching it, but it was on the elliptical, which made for interesting. I mean, I was like hooting and hollering, like really enjoying the episode. I think the only other thing to bring up is we didn't get Moira in the flashbacks. They were very particular on who they brought back for the flashbacks in the documentary. And I appreciate that. Maybe it was just because we can't bring back everybody. Okay, got it. But I think they did a good job, and I think, like I said, if the show makes it to 200, I'm wondering what they have in store for us for 200. You know, like as a concept, because they don't know where the story is going to be in 50 episodes if they get another 2 seasons beyond this. But the concept of, okay, so we did the documentary, and then for 100, it was part of the crossover. What is our 200 going to look like? So it's something to look forward to if we get there.
Curtis, man. Curtis was his typical geeky, funny little self. He talked about, you know, private satellites in front of a camera crew, was really happy he came up with the bad guy name. And he's like, what? You know, I'm not Cisco. So he name dropped Cisco in front of this camera crew.
I got a question about that. Is Chimera a comic book Easter egg for something that's in DC Comics of a mechanical, you know, warrior type dude?
Not that I know of, but I'm going to the Google machine.
Okay.
There's a King Chimera, evidently. Member of the superhero team, the Justice Society of America, but that's a good guy. I don't know. The only thing they reference here is King Chimera, who's a master illusionist with a genius intellect that I see, so don't know.
Is that the same thing as Lord Chimera?
I don't know, and I don't know. It's DC, so I'm a little fuzzier there on some of the side characters.
Okay.
But hey, his name, you know, stuck, and he got to say suit up. But then he realized everybody was already suited up. Anyway.
Except him.
Yeah. In that scene. Except him. Maybe he was telling himself to suit up.
Yeah, that's it. Note to self. Suit up.
Well, perhaps we'll get more Curtis and T Spears and Team Arrow next week in the episode 13 of season 7 called Star City Slayer. It will air Monday, February 11, 2019. Oliver and Felicity are disappointed after they learn that William is hiding something from them. Wanting to focus on his family, Oliver steps back from his Green Arrow duties and lets the team take over tracking down a serial killer. However, when the team becomes targets for the killer, things take a bloody turn. Directed by Gregory Smith and written by Beth Schwartz and Jill Blankenship.
Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of the Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with award-winning news anchor Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
We don't have any news.
Oh, we don't.
The news is there's no news. It's been suspiciously quiet.
Okay. Well, what an amazing 150th. And because of that, we actually have feedback from our last episode as well about this episode. And it's from our commenter, Peafruit. And she said, I watched Arrow 150 and really enjoyed the documentary format. It was a fresh take on an episode. Plus, it was nice to see so many guest appearances, specifically Thea and Quentin. Also, the callback to Adam Hunt in season one was great. The villain of the week was a throwaway, but he gave us some great fight scenes. I like that they addressed the lack of bromance between Diggle and Oliver. It was nice to finally see a version of John Diggle I recognize. You mean Green Lantern John Diggle? Oh, I'll have to go back to the crossover on that. I hope they have a similar conversation between Diggle and Felicity because that friendship, and I would say marriage, has been strained. Also, he really needs to tell Felicity about Diaz. Yes, he does. William's subplot, while not exactly fun to watch, actually made sense. He had been kidnapped. An explosion killed his mom. His dad went to prison, and then his new mom was almost shot right in front of him. That kid has a lot of issues. And while I understand that after the break-in during Season 7, Episode 8, and the Elseworlds craziness, Felicity probably thought it was best not to bring him home to that insanity, I also understand his resentment. There's more to the story since he was expelled. I'm inclined to believe they will be revealing his sexuality soon, and that may be playing a part in his behavior. Side note, they may not share blood, but he really is a lot like Felicity if he was able to create a fake school website. And I really appreciate them showing the friendship between William and Zoe that was mentioned in the flash forwards. I found Mayor Pollard's turnaround and acceptance of vigilantes abrupt. We keep being told by the flash forwards that vigilantism led to the destruction of Star City. I feel that Pollard deciding to deputize the whole team is a setup for their downfall. So, Chris, Peafruit has given us a lot to think about. What do you want to talk about there?
Well, let's start at the end. I agree that the turn's abrupt, but I think the turn is abrupt on purpose because it's, hey, the public is kind of on their side right now. Let's set them up and see what happens here. And if they succeed, great. I get credit for giving them a chance. And if they fail, I can go back and make, I told you, vigilantes weren't the answer.
Michelle, I'm getting the feeling that you agree completely with Peafruit here.
Basically, we agree a lot. I do agree about the Diggle and Felicity comment. They do need a conversation because he really wasn't there for her. You know, he just kept relying on, you know, Felicity, be with us, you know, with Argus, when really Felicity needed John Diggle. She needed to talk to Spartan. Spartan needed to help Felicity while Oliver was in prison. Not this Argus guy. So they do need to have that conversation.
Okay, so I'm just going to go back to the end again with Mayor Pollard. I think you're spot on that she had a abrupt change, although I kind of discussed that before. I want to go a step further. I don't think she makes it out of the season. I think whatever happens to Star City, maybe next season, right? But whatever happens to Star City, she doesn't make it out of. And then also, she could be a bad guy. And she might be deputizing all the vigilantes to make sure she can keep tabs on them, you know, within official circles. So that is a possibility. I mean, the show has taught us to look out for that sort of stuff. And if that's the case, maybe that contributes to what happens to the city. I don't know. Anything else, guys? We're on Prefruit's comments here.
No, but thank you for putting those in. We appreciate it.
I have something. I realize that mayors don't last long on this show, and neither do district attorneys. And Laurel is our current district attorney, and she's not being mentioned in the flash forwards yet. Neither has Curtis.
Mm. She did seem like she took those YouTube law courses to heart, and that she knew vigilantes were officially not able to operate within Star City. So I think she's moved ahead in her education on being a lawyer.
Exactly.
We also had a great comment on Discord from network owner Stephen John Drew. He said, I still suspect the flash forwards could be wiped out. Perhaps it even leads to how the timeline is resolved. Like maybe an action they do in the future affects the past, because I totally agree with SP. What? He totally agree. Wow. Okay. So Stephen John Drew totally agrees with me. I think that as they stand, it puts a damper on it. As someone said on Twitter that I saw, they basically mean that all their hard work in the present, quote, means jack poop, unquote. And that is from network owner Stephen John Drew. Michelle, what do you think about that? I mean, he even agreed with me.
I know. First off, that's amazing. We have to immortalize this day for history, because this rarely happens. You know, I said from the beginning of the season that flash forwards make me uneasy, because we're seeing the end of, you know, possibilities. And I do want to have hope for our heroes. But considering, you know, the crisis is coming up, we have Legends, and we are getting a bit timey-wimey in the Arrowverse, I am hoping that Beth does something really good with this, and it just exceeds our expectations.
We have a lot of trust in Beth right now, and she's not steered us wrong. And yeah, we'll just leave it at that for now. And Beth, thank you very much for making this an entertaining season. Chris, do you want to say anything back to Steven here on his Discord comment?
I'm shocked. Shocked that he said he agrees with SP. That's a rare instance, and I think we should memorialize this statement on like a plaque somewhere and hang it up on your wall.
Yeah. I can do that. And we can have it etched somewhere in a little metal plaque online somewhere. I can get a wooden plaque and we can put that on there. I totally agree with SP, Stephen John Drew, for episode 227 of the Starling Tribune about episode number 150 of Arrow. All right. I think that wraps up the feedback for the week, Chris.
All right. Well, this is that part of the show where we like to remind folks that, the Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of the Gunna Geek Network, where you can find a variety of geeky and nerdy podcasts that will probably soothe whatever geeky thing you're looking for. And as much as I would love to talk about every show on the network, we very well can't do that. But what we can do is give you a taste of another show and say, hey, go check this one out. And this week, we're talking about The Intellectual Podcast with their Season 6 premiere. David and Whitney return to kick off the 6th season of The Intellectual Podcast. Join them as they talk about the future, Whitney's progress in her journey to full-time actor status, and much more. So you can go check that and all of the other Gunna Geek Network shows out by heading on over to GunnaGeek.com.
A lot of great shows over there, folks.
It is true. That being said, though, it is time for us to start shutting this thing down. So a big thank you to all of our live listeners who joined us at Geeks.live, but also thank you to everyone who downloads the audio podcast or catches the video replay at YouTube.com/GunnaGeek.
We actually have an Amazon skill that you can use to listen to our podcast. We also have a Discord server, as I mentioned before, that you can come on by and discuss great episodes like this one with us. Or if it's not so great an episode, you can always complain over there. Once again, that's GunnaGeek.com/Discord. And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursdays.
We would love to hear from you. We're the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag CGI arrows.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag why no hossing.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.